Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So, I don't know if I know pretty much everybody. My name is Madhavananda Das, and we'll try to take up this seminar with a culture of respect. So, I wanted to begin with this particular song. They talk about Bhaktivinod Kripa Bindu Diya, because he gives some indication in this song about the importance of respect and the scientific understanding of how to do it. As noted here in your printout, Bhaktivinod says that this song is based on the Trinada Pisa Nichina verse spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has a lot to say about that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a very important verse, and it's the basis of this whole discussion that we want to have today. Sometime we were invited to Bangalore last year, and we gave a seminar on this same subject, and the devotees were thinking that we're going to tell them to eat with their right hand and how to say excuse me and please and things like that, but that's not the purpose at all. We'd like to discuss some philosophical understanding by which we can, something we can grasp with our mind and take into our heart, by which we can very naturally be able to offer respect to all living entities. And as we'll discuss, this respect is very, very beneficial ultimately for our bhajan, very needful for our bhajan. It's also very helpful for our devotee society. And as the title of the lecture, the seminar goes, A Culture of Respect, it's also necessary for any culture. And to the extent that, to the degree that a culture, a society, has some understanding of a hierarchy, a reason to offer respect to different persons, we consider that to be a cultured society or an advanced society. And the opposite also goes. To that degree where people don't respect others, then it's considered to be a degraded or fallen society. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he describes in Antya Lila, chapter 20. If someone is very exalted, they don't give respect to other people. They come in and they have a very proud bearing and they expect everyone to offer respect to them. But although Kaviraj Goswami is saying that Uttamahai Vaishnava Habha, although a Vaishnava, he's the most exalted person. And we won't go in this direction to establish this point. I hope all of you philosophically understand that a Vaishnava is the most exalted person. Still, Habi Nirabhiman, he has no abhiman. He has no false ego. This is a symptom of Vaishnava. And his symptom is that jive samana dive jani krishna adhisthana. He offers respect to every jiva. And not just in a sentimental way. Sometimes we want to be respectful to other persons, but our motivation may be to really get respect for ourselves. So we go to someone else and we say, Oh Prabhu, you're very, very exalted. I'm very, very fallen. And please let me touch your feet. Let me take the remnants of your food. And like this. And devotees, sometimes they have some affectionate exchanges like this. Not that it's necessarily wrong. But sometimes we may have a motivation for doing that, which is really to have some glorification for ourselves. So then everyone would say, Oh, Madhavananda, you know, he's a very, very humble person. Like that. But the Vaishnavas, they offer respect for a reason. And that reason is that Krishna Adhisthan, Jani Krishna Adhisthan, they understand, they know that Krishna is a resting place in every living entity. Krishna is there in everyone's heart. So Kaviraj Goswami, he says it about this conception. Hey Mata, hai, hai, hey Krishna Naram, Sri Krishna Charani Tanya, Prema Huparjan. If someone chants the Hare Krishna mantra, if we want someone chants Krishna's names in this manner, in this mood, offering respect to everyone, then he'll certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. And then Kaviraj Goswami, he gives this verse, Trinadapi sunichena tororeva sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahadihi. We'll explore this verse more elaborately in a few days, examine some of the things that Thakur Bhaktivinoda says about it. It has deep meaning, each and every word in this verse. But I think all of you know the general translation for this, that someone who thinks himself lord and straw in the street, who's more tolerant than a tree, who's ready to offer all respect to other persons and not take any respect for himself, then kirtaniya sadahari, he can always chant the holy name of Krishna. And Kaviraj Goswami then says, Udva bahu kori kahon suna sarvalo. Udva bahu, with two hands in the air. Udva bahu kori kahon suna sarvalo. He's saying, all of you please listen. Two hands in the air, I'm saying this because it's a very important thing. Namasute ganti para kanti slo. He says that all of you should take a thread and you should string this verse and hang this around your neck and remember this verse, this Trinadapi Sunichina verse at all times. So such an important verse. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he's given some explanation of this in his Sarnagati, in the song Gurudev Kripa Bindu Diya. Sometimes we may think that I've been in the society for 1 year, 2 years, and I haven't gotten initiated, it's not very good, everyone calls me Bhakta. It's not very prestigious. So I should get initiated. And then everybody will give me some respect. And if I get second initiation, even better. And they'll give me the Mahaplate and even more respect. But this, of course, is not our purpose in taking initiation. We want to have some exchange with our Gurudev. We want something from him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's praying at Gurudev Kripa Bindu Diya. He's saying that you just give me one drop of your mercy. And what is the nature of Guru? Samsara dhavana lalita loka chanaya kavina gana ganatvam. He's gana ganatvam. He's like a cloud which showers down so much rain. So Bhaktivinoda is saying that you're giving so much rain, so much mercy everywhere. If you just give me one drop of that upon my head, then everything will be successful. And what is that thing that I would like? Kripa bindu diya koroe dasi. That you please make me your servant. He's not saying, you please accept me as your servant. But he's saying, koroe dasi, you make me your servant. Tanape kya atihina. And you make me, you give me this understanding that I'm more humble, more fallen than a blade of grass. So from this we can understand that this Trinadapi Sunichina Bhav comes through a relationship with Guru. When we approach Guru, when we approach the senior Vaishnava sadhu, a saintly person in this way, and we pray for their mercy, this is the form of their mercy. Sometimes we think that, oh Gurudev, he hasn't really given me any mercy. And he gave a lot of mercy to this other person because he made him temple president. And he made him GBC, this or that. That's real mercy. But real mercy means that Guru gives us this understanding that we're lower than the straw on the street. There's a story here in Vrindavan about one person who came from Calcutta to find a guru. So he came to Vrindavan and he was told about one sadhu who was staying at Radhakund. And he went to this sadhu and he associated with him for a little while and he saw the sadhu's very exalted personality. So this man from Bengal, he approached him and said, you please give me initiation. So this man from Bengal, he was a very qualified person. He was a PhD and very knowledgeable in Sanskrit, very big scholar and pundit, and very expert in so many ways. And we might think very qualified. But this sadhu that he approached saw that he was very unqualified because he had this abhiman, he had this pride. So the guru said, the sadhu said, anyway, I don't know, you're a very exalted person, we'll see. And he just kind of brushed it aside. Then again and again, this Calcutta man kept approaching him, please, please, give me initiation. Finally, the man told him, he said, okay, the sadhu told him, that I can give you initiation, but you have to give me some bakshish. And I want this bakshish before I give you initiation, some remuneration, some charity, whatever, some payment. So the man said, yes, yes, what is that? He said, very simple thing. I just want you to find one thing, one person who is lower than you. In every way. And you find that person and bring him to me. As soon as you do that, then I'll give you initiation. And I said, very good. Very nice day. That should be no problem. I'm a very exalted personality. I'm very, very knowledgeable. It should be very easy here. In Vrindavan, there's so many rickshaw wallahs and so many ignorant persons. It won't be hard to find someone who's lesser than me. So he set out looking. You know? And his guru gave him 1 week of time to do that. This sadhu. So he went out looking. And he would find some person, some rickshaw wallah, some low-class person, and he would think, oh, he's lesser than me. But then he would associate with that person for a little while, and he would say, oh, but actually he's a bridge bossy. And bridge bossies are very exalted. Or he would see in some way or other that they had some special quality which he didn't have. In some way, they were more exalted than him. So he looked and looked and looked. He was having great difficulty finding anyone. Finally, he started looking among the animals. But then he was also seeing that they're rendering service in different ways to Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. They're also Brijbasis. So it was becoming very difficult. Finally, the day came when he was supposed to go and see his guru. And that morning, he got up and he was in great anxiety. What am I going to do if I don't find someone lesser than myself? I can't get initiated. So that morning, he went out to answer the call of nature. And he was passing stool in the field. And as he was passing, he saw a worm enter into his stool and start eating that stool. So the man thought, yes, very good. Finally, I found someone who's lower than me. This worm, he's very, very low. I'll bring him to my Gurudev. But then he thought to himself, wait a minute. Actually, really, if I consider it carefully, this worm is also more exalted than me. I'm such a nasty person. I'm eating very nice Krishna prasad. But what do I do with it? After I eat it, what is this machine, this body machine, what does it turn it into? Very nasty, terrible stool, which has a very offensive odor, and is very full of germs and very contaminating. But this worm, he's so exalted that he's able to take this nasty thing and use it for some good thing. So he also has a quality that I don't have, a good quality. So he felt very bad. And he went to his guru, his sadhu, and he said, Maharaj, I'm very sorry. I said, but I failed. You told me to find someone who was lesser than myself, but I wasn't able to do that. And the sadhu then became very happy with him and told him, no. He said, now I will give you initiation. But I saw that you had this abhiman, this pride, and this is preventing you in your spiritual life. And so to remove that pride, I gave you this instruction. So Gurudev Kripa Bindu Diya Korave Dasi Chinape Kaati Hina. Sakala sahani bhaladiya kwaro nijamani spriyahani spriyahina. And what is the nature of this thing if you develop this chanadapi sanichinu bhav? Is that sakala sahani bhaladiya kwaro? You'll be able to tolerate all difficulties. We see sometimes, especially amongst neophyte devotees, very new people, they get angry very easy. Hey, you stepped on my foot. Why did you do that? You finished all the prasadam before I got there. This is very bad. You know, I was out all day long collecting and selling books, and I've come back and there's no more prasadam. You should think about others. You should be a little more humble, you know. And they speak like that. But the symptom of the sanatapi sunichina bhava is that you can tolerate anything. That when you consider yourself to be lower than the straw on the street, when that's your abhiman, when that's your conception of yourself, then you're able to tolerate everything. You don't become angry at other people. Nijamani spiyahina. And you give up any desire for personal honor and fame. And at that time, sakale samana korite shakati. The guru gives us the strength, korite shakati, shakati, that he gives us the strength, the ability to offer respect to all persons. And how? Deho nata jata jata. According to their position. As we may discuss later if we have the time, there's three types of Vaishnavas who have different adhikars, different qualifications for bhakti. There's the Kanishya, the Madhyam, and the Uttam. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says that the symptom of the Kanishya is that he's very sentimental. And that he considers an advanced person to be someone who offers all respect to everyone equally. Which is the Uttam. The Uttam sees everyone as better than himself. But the Kanishta criticizes the Madhyam. He thinks, he's not a sadhu. Just see, this temple president, he asks his devotee to leave. That's not very saintly. That's a very bad thing. The Kanishta, he's a sentimental person. So Bhaktivinoda, he's instructing us. Deho nata jata jata. Deho nata jata jata. You please Give me the strength to properly recognize each and every person. And this is culture. This is a society. A person who cultivates that thing, they have culture. And therefore, this, in this sentence of culture of respect, the word culture is both it's a verb and a pronoun. It's something that you do. We should cultivate respect. And also, it's a culture. You should culture respect, and it's something that indicates that you're a saintly person, you're an elevated person, a gentle person, a gentleman. Then at that time, he says, "Tavitai goibo harinama suki aparada habihata." If I can do this thing, then I'll always be able to chant the holy name, and I'll become free from offense. Kaviheno kripa labhya ejan kritveta hoi benata. So Bhaktivinoda is praying that when will I attain this mercy? We should be very, very greedy for this thing. And he says, Shakti buddhihina ami yati dina koro more atma sata. He says that I have no qualification. Sometimes we think that we're coming to the society and we're doing Prabhupada a favor. We're doing the Vaishnavas a favor. We're doing our Guru Maharaj a favor. I'll be kind to him and let him initiate me because I'm a very exalted person. And if other people see that he's initiated me, I'm such a wealthy person, I'm so handsome, I'm so intelligent, I'm so educated, that if he gives me initiation, then he'll be glorified. Sometimes we think this. We may not say it, but people are thinking like that. But Bhaktivinoda, he's describing the attitude that we approach Guru in. Shakti buddhihina. Amiyati dina. I'm very, very fallen. Koro more atma sata. You please make me your own. Yogita vichari kicho nahi pai. When I look at myself, I don't see any good qualities. Only one good quality do I see. Tomara korunasar. The only thing that I'm made out of is your mercy. Karuna na hoile kandiya kandiya prananara kibuhar. And if you're not merciful to me, then I'm simply going to cry and cry and I won't be able to maintain my life. So, today we want to give some general overview of the subject matter and speak a little something. We'll go closer and closer to the subject as we continue. And then the last day or two, we'll describe different problems in offering respect. What if someone who's a senior person, but they're a debauchee or they're this or that, and how do we respect our Gurudev, especially in comparison to other Vaishnavas? How should we respect other Vaishnavas? Other Vaishnavas in our society, other Vaishnavas outside of our society. We'll discuss some problems later on. But today we mostly want to just give a general foundation for things. We've written one quote here on the board from Confucius. Very nice quote. Confucius, he says that without feelings of respect, what is it to distinguish a man from a beast? So this is a discerning quality between a man and an animal. We worship the cows, but if you see the cows, they don't give any respect to the other cows. The only system of respect they have is if one cow has bigger horns, then they give more respect like that. And the same with the monkeys and different animals. They're not giving respect. Simply they're acting according to their bodily desires. So we've noted here on the board, there's three general systems of respect. This is some concept we've had. Someone else may want to divide it in other different ways. We've generally described them as Asura, Vanashram, and Daivi Vaishnav. And Daivi Vaishnav could actually be in the two different categories. We put it in one, but it could be two. And we've discussed something about the motivations within these individual systems. The materialistic society is based on artha and kama. It's based on wealth and sex life. And this is the predominating system of respect that's being offered in the society and the world today. If you have a very beautiful woman, or what to speak, if you have 10 girlfriends, and if you have a lot of money, then people, they're respectful to you. And it doesn't matter what kind of situation you're born in. In America, you may have heard of Harlem or Watts. Harlem is in New York and Watts is in Los Angeles. And they're two very poor places. And the people there are considered very low class in general. So you may be born in Harlem, or you may be born in Watts, but if you are able to get a very beautiful wife or some very beautiful girlfriends, then people will respect you regardless of how you were born. If you get some very nice physical strength, which is also sex life, and people, they'll offer respect to you, and they may make you the governor of California. If you get a lot of money, then they'll vote you into office, and this and that. So these are the systems, the motivations for offering respect in the materialistic society. In the Vanashram system, there's four reasons for offering respect. Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are the basic things, which are, according to the Vanashram society, we offer respect according to someone's age. Amongst the sudras, if someone is older than someone else, we offer respect to that. If someone has wealth, amongst the vaishyas, we offer respect to that. If someone has some strength, some physical strength, we offer respect to that, to the kshatriyas. And if someone has knowledge, we offer respect to that amongst the brahmins. And this is described in Vishnu Smriti, chapter 32. Vipranam genato yaishyam kshatriyanam tu viryata vaishyanam danyadanata sudranam eva janmataha. That the seniority of brahmins is based on sacred knowledge. The kshatriyas is based on heroic deeds and strength. Vaishyas gain seniority due to possessing grains or other wealth. And the sudras alone is determined by birth. So that's a progressive culture. But more progressive than that is a Daivi Vanashram system. And there's eight different reasons Thakur Bhaktivinoda in his Chaitanya Sikshamrita has given. He says that a cultured person should offer respect to humans. Naramatvena Maryada. Maryada means some respect. So we're speaking in front of Maharaj today. So this is not proper Maryada. We should beg permission from saintly persons from senior persons before we try to speak in front of them. Prabhupada, he described this in the Bhagavatam as, there's a phrase that slips my mind. Maryada Vyatikram, right. This is one person being impertinent and speaking in front of a senior person. So he gives eight different reasons why we should offer respect. We can gloss over these briefly. The first one is that we should be respectful to human beings. Naramatrena Maryada. To be a human being is an exalted thing. To get a human birth is a very, very rare thing. So a cultured person, he'll naturally give respect to any human. More than that, he'll give respect to someone who's civilized, Sabyatara Maryada. Someone who has some culture, who appreciates Vedic culture, has some proper etiquette and things. More than that, he'll offer respect, which is known as Raj Maryada or Pada Maryada, to someone's position. If someone is a king, they offer respect to that person. If someone is a senior person, a mayor of the town, or a wealthy man, or a professor or something, we naturally offer respect to them. Prabhupada, when he was in Bhubaneswar, the devotees took him to Nandankanan Zoo. And they were walking through the zoo, chanting japa, and Prabhupada noticed that one devotee was taking a stick and he was harassing a lion inside of the cage. And Prabhupada stopped and said, "Hey, you stop that. What are you doing? You should be respectful. After all, he's a lion." Prabhupada said like that. So even amongst the animals, the Vaishnavas, we see different reasons how and why we can offer respect. We've given some excerpt from Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita translation purport on the last page. A very nice example of this. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he's described that Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, Sakar Malik and Dabir Khas at that time, they were the prime minister of the Nawab Hussain Shah. And Rupa Goswami managed to escape from that, but Sanatana Goswami was still there. And at one point, he was neglecting his duties. And he was a very, very important man in the Nawab Hussain Shah's administration. And things were not running right without his being there. So the Nawab sent someone to find out what was going on. And the word came that Sanatana Goswami was sick. So then he sent someone to actually check on him. And when he came back, he said, "Oh, Maharaj, the Sanatana Goswami, actually, he's hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in association with a bunch of Vaishnava Brahmins." So the Nawab became very angry. And he went there to see what was going on. And Kaviraj Goswami, He describes what happened when the Nawab walked into their assembly. As soon as he walked in, then immediately all the Brahmins and everyone stood up very respectfully and they gave him a place to sit. Why is that? Prabhupada writes in the purport, although Nawab Hussain Shah was a Malecha Yavan, he was nonetheless the governor of the country. And the learned scholars in Sanatana Goswami offered him all the respect due to a king or a governor. This Nawab Hussain Shah, he was very famous for having broken so many Vaishnava temples and broken deities and murdered Vaishnava Brahmins and slaughtered them in so many terrible ways. Yet when he walked into the room, these cultured persons with Sanatana Goswami immediately, they stood up and they offered respect to him. It wasn't because they were afraid of him. It wasn't because they wanted to impress him or try to get something from him. But Prabhupada notes there's a reason. When a person occupies an exalted executive post, one should consider that he has acquired the grace of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:41, Lord Krishna says, Yad yad vibhuti mat satvam, shrimad urjitam eva va, tat tarivava gatsha tvam, mama teja misasambhavam. Know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. Prabhupada continues, whenever we see something exalted, we must consider it part of the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A powerful man, vibhuti mat sattvam, is one who has obtained the grace of the Lord or has derived some power from him. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:10, Krishna says, tejas tejasvinam aham. I am the power of the powerful. The learned Brahmin scholars showed respect to Nawab Hussain Shah because he represented a fraction of Krishna's power. So this is the nature of the Vaishnavas, is they are able to offer all respect to everyone because they see Krishna Adhisthan, Jani Krishna Adhisthan, as Kaviraj Goswami was saying. They see that Krishna is in the heart of everyone. And they have a scientific reason for offering him respect. And this is given in Bhaktivinoda's Chaitanya Sikshamrita. This Rajmarit is there. So we can offer respect to the kings and senior persons because they have some position like that. Krishna's given them that. We should do that. We should pay our taxes. Even as Jesus says in the Bible, when they came to Jesus and they said, look, should we, these guys, these are really bad people. They're going and they're harassing all of us. They're harassing all the Jews and murdering them and everything. And Jesus said, you should give Caesar his due. Caesar was a very impious person, a very unjust ruler. But Christ instructed them that you should give him the proper respect. If we don't do that, how will the society go on? I remember when we were growing up in high school, it was in the late 70s, and there was still some vestige of the hippie era concept then. And sometimes we would tell the teacher, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. And it would be myself and one friend at the same time. And we would go in the hallway where no one was at, because there everyone was in class. And then we would stand on our friend's shoulders, and very high on the wall, we would put a bumper sticker, paste it on the wall. And the bumper sticker said, question authority. And that was our slogan in those days, question authority. But as we may describe in some later sessions of this, persons who have that attitude, if they become successful, they become the authority. And then what happens? A much better thing, a much more humble thing, a much more conducive thing for the society and for ourselves as individuals is to respect the authorities. Even if there may be some faults with them. And we'll discuss more what to do when we see some fault in such persons. But that's Raja Maryada. And a gentleman, a cultured person, offers respect for that reason. He offers more respect, though, to Vidya Maryada, to persons who are educated, who are knowledgeable. Someone has some good education, a PhD and this thing, that we should offer them respect. What will they think of the Hare Krishna devotees? We offer respect to someone who has a PhD. They think all these people are so puffed up. Rather, they should see that the Vaishnavas are the most humble, the most gentle, the most sincere. But we should have a solid reason for offering respect. So this is Vidya Maryada. And then more than that is Sadguna Maryada. We offer respect to those who have good qualities, Sadguna. Especially the Brahmins, the Sannyasis, and the Vaishnavas. There's someone who actually has some good qualities. Not just they're wearing a thread or something, but they may be a Sudra, but they have the quality of a Brahman. Yashya lakshanam proktam pumsavana bivanjakam. It's described by Narad Muni in the seventh canto to Yudhisthira Maharaj, that you can understand, you can tell someone what varna ashram they're in, what varna they're in, according to the qualities that they have, not according to their birth. So this is Sadguna Maryada. And then Varna Maryada, we offer respect to, especially to the Brahmins, according to their varna, according to their qualities. There's four different varnas, Chatur Varna Mayashristam, in the Vedic system. And guna karma vibhagasaha, according to their qualities and their work, they're understood. And those are the sudras, the vaishyas, the kshatriyas, and the brahmins. So especially we offer respect to the brahmins. But we offer respect to anyone who's in this vanashram system. Even the sudras are also very, very respectable persons. They have some knowledge, they have some education, they have some skill. And like, we should give them respect, some honor for doing that thing. That they're expert in making baskets, they're expert in painting pictures or playing music, or doing this thing or that thing. And by giving them respect, they get some encouragement, and they're able to contribute more to the society. More than that, we offer ashram maryada. We offer respect to the ashram. And amongst all the ashramas, the brahmacharis, the grihasthas, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis, we offer respect especially to the sannyas ashram. The sannyas ashram is considered to be the guru of all the different varnas and ashrams. Someone who does that has a cultured person. Prabhupada writes in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that if someone does not offer obeisances to a sannyasi, then they should fast for that whole day. This is a cultured person. Not that we think, oh, he doesn't know any verses, or he's like this or that. He doesn't like my guru. He's this thing or that thing. I'm not going to be respectful to him. It means you're not a cultured person. And we're not necessarily offering respect to that person, but we're offering respect to that post that they have. And you have some culture if you do that. It's good for your bhajan. And it's good for our society. And then ultimately is bhakti maryada. We offer respect to bhakti. And we'll describe that a little later on in more detail. So we can touch a little bit today on this asura system, which is a very common thing today. Today everyone seems to be following the United States of America. In the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson and the founding fathers of America, they drafted a statement which they sent to the King of England. And they told him, look buddy, we don't want anything to do with you anymore. We're independent now. It was their Declaration of Independence. And they wrote in that thing some very philosophical points. And some of those founding fathers were philosophical people. Some of them were reading the Gita and studying Indian philosophy. Therein they wrote that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. So this is the basis of American culture, this statement. And today we can say practically it's the basis of the worldwide culture, because everyone is following America. And we hold these truths to be self-evident. They're saying this is a truth and it's self-evident. It's very obvious. That all men are created equal. And people, they become very angry if you don't grant them that equality. In the Western culture, they want equality for the women, they want equality for the sudra workers, they want equality for everyone. Everyone should get equal opportunity for money, for respect, for fame, for position. And this is considered to be a high-class society. But actually, if we think about it, although there's some spiritual truth in it, and that's why they're saying it's self-evident. We're all spirit souls. But if you don't have the spiritual understanding, it really doesn't make any sense. It's completely nonsense. If we try to say about all the personalities in this room right now, if we try to say that everybody here is equal, it's a nonsense statement. One person in the room, if we analyze carefully in a non-biased way, will conclude, yes, this person possesses the greatest bodily beauty. And another person possesses the greatest wealth. We're all devotees, are trying to be devotees here, so maybe it's 100 rupees or 200 rupees or something. But one person in this room must have, logically, have more money than everyone else. Or maybe it's two people have the same amount. Then one person has a greater earning capacity, or he has more money in his ashram. And if we think about it, we can't find any way, materially, where any two people are equal. Nobody's equal. The whole thing is just absurd. There's no two men who are equal in terms of strength, in terms of knowledge, in terms of education, in terms of beauty, in terms of speaking ability, in terms of anything. Nobody's equal. But they still had this basic understanding that this is a self-evident truth in a spiritual way. So this is a noble idea, but the social system that they based this thing on wasn't based on a spiritual truth. It's based on artha and kama. These are the values of that society. And it wasn't that they sat down and said, look, we're going to make these the rules, we're going to tell everybody they should value this thing. But because of people's self-conception, because of the concept they had of themselves, when we think that I'm this body, I'm this bag of stool, urine, puss, blood, bile, mucus, and air, when we think like this, then the purpose of life becomes to exploit everybody else. It becomes hedonism. And whoever can do that faster and better than anyone else, then we clap our hands and we give them a prize. And that's Western society today. Therefore, it's called the me generation. And there may be some respect in that society. You may protest, well, this is not a very gentle thing and not a very considerate, kind thing that you're saying. I've been in America, and I see that the children, they bring an apple to the teacher in the morning, and they stand up and they say, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. And they're like that. At least they used to when I was in school. I think it's become a little more degraded. But there's some system of respect there. How can you say like that? But if we study their system of respect, their system of respect is like the story of the scorpion and the camel. Once a scorpion, he wanted to cross a river. But the water's very deep. He can't cross. He'll drown. So he saw a camel was coming that way. Camels are not overly bright. So he thought, oh, maybe I can stop and ask him to hitch a ride across the river. So he asked the camel, my dear sir, please, could you give me a ride across the river? And the camel, he wasn't so bright, but he had some brain. He said, well, why would I do like that? You're a scorpion. You'll sting me. It's a very dangerous thing. And the scorpion said, no, 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 no. You don't understand. I'm an ethical scorpion. What? Ethical. I have some morality. I have some culture. I have some respect. I won't sting you. So the camel, he wasn't that bright. So he agreed. And the scorpion climbed on top of his hump. And he started going across the river. Halfway across the river where the water was the deepest, suddenly the scorpion stung him. And the camel, he said, why did you do that? Now we're both going to drown and die. And the scorpion, he said, what can I do? It's my nature. So, like this, we may try to hide our nature for some other motivation. And if we think about it, especially we see this in India, all the politicians, they dress up like Gandhi. They wear some dhoti and kirtan hat. But everybody knows in India that the worst people in the whole culture are the politicians. They're the biggest, most corrupt people that there are. But they dress themselves up like very, very pious persons, and they wave the flag of Gandhi, and they say, yes, we should be kind to everyone, and we should be very ethical, and like this and this. What is the purpose of their ethics? They're just making a show. The purpose of their ethics is to get your votes. Similarly, a school teacher may seem like a very respectable person in the West. But why is he being respectable like that? Because otherwise you won't come and take education from him. You'll kick him out. A student is offering respect to the teacher because if he doesn't, the teacher will give him a bad grade, a bad mark. If we study it in Western culture, so-called culture, all the systems of respect are based on selfishness, on the me generation, on hedonism. It's a symptom. It's like the scorpion. He's yes, I'm an ethical person. I won't sting you. But as soon as they get the opportunity, then immediately they'll do that thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this example in Chaitanya Sikshamrita. Similarly, as soon as they think that no one is watching, as soon as you say, well, here, let me give you a few $100,000, you please, you're an honest, good person, let me put this in your trust and I'll be back in a few days. Then immediately they take that money and they go. Just like the devotees, they have a drama, a very common play about the bank teller. The man is going to the bank every day and putting his money in the bank, and he makes good friends with the teller, and he's putting his money every day in the bank. And then one day he goes to the bank And that teller wasn't there anymore. And he asked, "Where's my friend?" "Oh, very bad thing, you know. He took a whole bunch of money and he left." "Really? Oh, my gosh, he was my good friend. How did that happen?" "Anyway, I want to check my account, how much money I have." And so they looked on the machine and they said, "I'm sorry, sir, but you don't have an account here." "So what do you mean? For all my whole life, for 30 years now, I've been coming every day and putting all my money in the bank account. This is my life savings. Where is it?" "No, no, you have no account here." What had happened, that teller, his dear friend, had made a false account in his own name. And he was taking that other man's money and putting it in his own account every day. Huh? So like that, when people get an opportunity in this Western culture, in this selfish culture, as soon as they get some opportunity to cheat you or do some unscrupulous thing, then immediately they do that. Huh? Because this culture, so-called culture, is based on a system of, it's based on greed and on lust. And we can read a few different descriptions from the Gita and the Bhagavatam. What is the nature of this lust? Krishna says in the third chapter, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava Mahasana Mahapapa Vidyanam Hivaryam. That this lust, this greed, is born from the material mode of passion and is transformed into wrath and is the all-devouring enemy of this world. So if we have a society, a culture, which is based on artha and kama, then naturally there's going to be so much wrath, so much anger, so much passion in the society. And it won't be a conducive, it won't be a progressive society. Krishna says in the next verse, Dumanavrite vahanya yatta darsha malena cha yatto balin avtyogarbas tata tini damavritam. He says that just as fire is covered by smoke, just as a mirror is covered by dust, and the embryo is covered by the womb, some living entity is covered by different degrees of this lust. So we develop these upadis, and this is a symptom of conditioned society, is we have some upadi, some false designation of ourself. And this is the hallmark, the essence of every society, materialistic society. We have some designation we give to each other. In the Asura society, that designation is some sinful designation based on personal enjoyment. In a Vanashram society, it's based on our Varna and Ashram, but which is also not our real self. But only in the Vaishnava society is it based on the understanding that we're a spirit soul. And therefore, it's described what is bhakti? Sarvupadi vinirmuktam, taparatvinam. That we should give up all these upadis. And this is really bhakti. And this is the essence of the first chapter of the Gita. Why Arjuna is having such a problem. Krishna, he told Krishna, Senagarupa yor madhye ritam sapayame achuta. Hey achuta, take my chariot in between the two armies. I want to see who's here to fight. And then what happened? Krishna spoke his first words in the Gita and he waved his arms and he said, look at here, all the Kurus. And he waved his hand at both sides, indicating to Arjuna that this is the enemy. Not just Duryodhan, not just Bhishma Dev, but everyone here. Meaning, your conception that these are my family members, this is what you have to kill in this battle. So these are upadis. And these upadis ultimately lead to violence. When a society is based on upadis, false designations like this, then 100% guaranteed that society will be a violent society. And you take the most violent area of crime. What is the most violent area of crime? Is love. So-called love in the West, which is married life. The 80 or 90% of the murders and killings, violence they have in the West is domestic violence between the husband and the wife, between brothers and sisters, the children and the parents, and like that. This is because of upadis. If we think about it, these upadis are a kind of violence. We say, oh, I love you. But what does that mean? That means that I love you, that you belong to me. And if you don't act, if you don't behave the way that I want, then I'm going to withdraw my favor to you. I'm going to withdraw my affection that I have for you. The father is very affectionate to his son. And he loves his son. As long as his son is, yes, father, no, father, whatever you say, father. As long as he's obedient to his father. But when the day comes and the boy comes home and says, hey, dad, you know, I met these guys downtown on the street and they gave me this book called Science of Self-Realization and this is really far out and I want to go join the Hare Krishnas. Then what happens? We've seen so many fathers, they become very angry. They say, oh, you're no longer my son. Get out from here. I disown you. Very, very bad. Huh? Because that so-called love, that relationship, is based on exploitation. And we see this even amongst the children. Children, they like to play with toys because they have some control over that toy. And sometimes we see that the children, they like to break the toys. They vent their anger out on the toy because they want to have some control over something. And that same childish nature is there also in adults, that we want to control someone. And we do that with these upadis. We give them some designation. Oh, you're my son. You're my wife. You're my husband. And as long as you act according to that upadi, you're good. And I like you. But if you go against that upadi, then I reject you. I hate you. So ultimately, the nature of these kind of materialistic upadis is violence. And therefore, Krishna says that these upadis, they cover the living entity. Avritam gyanam etena gyanino nityavarina kama rupena konteya duspreena nalena cha. So identifying ourselves with these external upadis, the living entity's consciousness becomes covered by lust. And he starts thinking in terms of how I can enjoy, because this is his central upadhi, is that everything in this world is here for my enjoyment. And all these different designations that I have and that I give to other people, they're all in connection with my personal or extended selfish enjoyment. And this lust, Krishna says, again, this is our eternal enemy, and this thing burns like fire. Kama mashrita dusparam, dhambamana madhandita, moha grit dasagrahan, pavartante suchivrataha. These persons who take shelter of this greed, this lust, then they become absorbed in pride. This is the nature. This is the opposite of Trinada Peace and Nichina. A society that puts the values, the social values in terms of artha and kama, by nature breeds pride. Because when you get some money, when you get some bodily beauty, when you get some education, then you start thinking, I'm a big man. And therefore, Kunti Devi, she prays, Janmaishvaya Sutta Sribya Edamana Madapuma Naivahatya Abhidatima Toma Kinchara Kucharam. She says, I don't want these things. These things are very, very bad. Janma Aishvarya, a very nice birth, a lot of wealth, Sutta Sribya, some good education. And now I have a PhD from Harvard University, from Oxford. And everyone's going to give me great respect because of that. Shuddha Sribir, some bodily beauty. All these things are very, very bad because they impede us from crying out to Krishna. And all of these things, they make someone very, very proud. And Krishna says in this verse, Kama masrita dusparam dhambamana madandita mohad vihitvisagrahan pravartante suchibrata. These persons who take shelter of this greed and lust, they become very proud and full of false prestige. And then by that they become illusioned. And they start thinking, I'm a very, very big person. And they become addicted, sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. So if we have a society that's based on this kind of hierarchy, just where we worship the movie stars and people because of their bodily beauty, because of the money that they have, because of the fame that they have, then it naturally is an agitated society because these things are impermanent. Krishna says in this verse, it's an impermanent thing, and everyone there, they're full of anxiety. Ahankaram balad darpam kamam krodam cha samshita mamatma paradeheshu pravishanto abhishuyaka. And such persons, they become very, very degraded, Krishna says. They become bewildered by their false ego, by this pride and their strength, and their lust and anger. And then in that situation, they become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like Hiranyakashipu, when Prahlad was telling him, my dear father, O best of your sirs, you should go to Vrindavan. You should worship Krishna. This is the best advice. His father became very, very angry. Who is there who's greater than me? How are you speaking like this? So Prabhupada notes that in today's society, there's so many little Hiranyakashipus. And everyone becomes very, very angry if you're telling them that they should worship someone beyond them. Prabhupada writes in the purport to this verse we just quoted from chapter 16, text 18. He says, a demoniac person being always against God's supremacy, does not like to believe in the scriptures. He is envious of both the scriptures and the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is caused by his so-called prestige and his accumulation of wealth and strength. So this is what happens when we accumulate too much wealth and too much strength and we're not using it in the proper way. Again, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, the Avanti Brahman, he describes, Artasya sadane siddhe ukkarshe rakshane vyaye naspa bhoga ayasas chasas chinta bhamoninam. He describes about wealth. He says that when Artasya means, Arta means wealth, sadhane, and when you're earning that wealth, siddhe, when you attain that wealth, ukkarshe, when it's increasing, rakshane, when you're trying to protect that wealth, vyaye, you're worrying about how to expand that wealth, naso, when you're trying to enjoy that wealth, when you're fearing about the loss of that wealth, in every way, he says that men experience great labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. This is the nature of pursuing wealth. He goes on to say, Stay amin sanitam dhamba kamam krodas maya madha bedho vairam adishvasaha samspardha vasanani cha eti pancha dasanarta yartha mula matanenam tasmaranarta martakyam sreoti dhritascha jet. This is what happens when you cultivate this wealth. This is what happens to a society, to a culture that's glorifying, that's worshiping the almighty dollar, in the language of America. Theft, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy, and the dangers caused by women, gambling, and intoxication. There are 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. Although these qualities are undesirable, men falsely ascribe value to them. One desiring to achieve the real benefit of life should therefore remain aloof from undesirable wealth. This wealth leads to pride. It leads to these 15 undesirable qualities. And if we think about it, this is a hallmark of today's society. Many times we've heard devotees speaking about how in the 1950s they did a survey in the schools in America. What are the big problems in the schools? And they had many serious problems in that time. Sometimes students would speak without being asked to speak. Sometimes they would chew gum, and they would stick it underneath the desk. Or sometimes they would be late for class. It was a very bad thing. Those are the problems in the 1950s. And then they compared it to the problems in the 1990s. In the 1990s, the problems are the students are bringing guns to school. They're killing people. They're raping people. They're stealing their money. They're threatening the teachers. Things have changed so much. Because of this excessive emphasis on money. In the 1950s, when the Industrial Revolution was really exploding in America, everybody thought things were going to be very, very good to having more machines and more technology. And pretty soon people won't have to work at all. They were thinking like that. We can just go on. We can just enjoy life. I have a nice washing machine. It'll do that work. And this other machine will do that work. And this thing and this thing. But then they found actually that their children became very disgusted with that society. And in the 60s and 70s, they had the hippie revolution. And so many people became disgusted with those so-called values in society. And today's situation in the West is just simply hedonism. People don't care for anyone. And you see this if you look in Los Angeles, you look in Dade County, Florida, they have a problem, they say, statistically about 1 out of 4 students in the high schools carry a handgun to school. It's a very heavy thing to be a teacher. You don't want to offend the students in Dade County. 1 out of 4 students are carrying a handgun to school. In Los Angeles, they say something like 2 or 4 people a day are killed by what they call drive-by shootings. Someone's just driving by in their car, and for a thrill, they pull a gun out and they just shoot and kill someone. They don't know the other person. They've never seen them before. I was in Seattle, Washington a few years ago, and I remember within a few days, there were 2 incidents which illustrate this point nicely. There was one man who was driving with his girlfriend in the car, and there was someone behind them driving very close, and it was dangerous on the freeway. So he made a rude gesture with his hand to the people behind him. And those people in the car behind him became very angry, and they drove up alongside him, and they pulled out a gun, and they shot and killed him, and they drove away. just because he made a rude gesture like that. A week or so later in Seattle, Washington, there was one old lady who was a little senile driving her car, and she was sitting at the light, and the light was red. She had to stop. And then the light turned green, and she's an old lady. She's not so quick. And she was sitting there, and the car behind her started honking and becoming very angry, and she didn't do anything. She was a little senile. So the person got out of the car and ran up with a gun and shot and killed her. So this is going on. There's so many examples we could give like this, unpleasant examples in the Western culture. But this is the society there today because these are the values. Because the identity they ascribe to everyone is chemicals and molecules. If you go to the Chicago Museum of Natural History in America, in Illinois, you'll see that they have a big glass jar with all the different elements of the body. And they say, this is about how much water, how much hydrogen, how much nitrogen, how much oxygen, how much this and that, all the different elements are present in your body. So you look at that, a very sad thing. That's all it purposes to life. It's just a bag of chemicals. And there's one writer in America, his name was a famous philosopher in the 60s and 70s. I think he passed away recently. His name was Kurt Vonnegut Jr. And he used to write a lot about this idea. He called it bad chemicals. Someone would come up and kill someone else with a gun and become very angry at them. He'd say it was some bad chemicals. Because ultimately, that's all these bodies are, right? It's bad chemicals. So I guess you have some bad chemicals. You have some bad chemicals one day and you get angry with someone and you go and shoot and kill them. But it's because of the identity that we ascribe to ourselves. And then this identity gives corresponding values. So for this materialistic, atheistic society, everyone is thinking of their body. Therefore, Prabhupada emphasizes this point so much because this is the basic, the domino which will destroy everything, their whole philosophy, is this understanding that I'm this body, that this is all there is. People are thinking like that and their whole culture is based upon that thing. So this is the Asura system. And even we see in the Vanashram system that this pride leads to degradation. It's described in the 10th canto, chapter 73, text 30 of the Bhagavatam. Hai hai o nahusho vino, ravano naroko pare, simadad brahmsitastana deva daitya nareshvaraha. It's described there. That hai haya is the person who stole Jamadagni's horse, Parshuram's father. Parshuram became very angry with him. He was a Kshatriya. He became very proud and stole the wealth of the Brahmins. And for that he was killed and all the Brahmins were wiped out. Nahusha, you may know about Nahusha. He became like Indra. And when he became Indra, he became very, very proud. And he told the Brahmins one day, hey, I want to go and see Sachi, Indra's wife, but to impress her, I want to go in a very nice palanquin, very nice carrier. Yes, what would you like? Would you like some swans? Would you like some horses? What would you like for your carrier? He said, I want the Supta Rishis to carry me. So he had the Brahmins carrying him like this. And he put his foot on the head of a Gautam Muni. And because of that, he was cursed. And he fell down from that position because of his pride. Ravana, this verse describes, we know the story about Ravana, who is destroyed because of his pride. Narakasura, Naraka, he was a ruler of the demons. And he stole Aditi's earrings. And because of that, he was killed. So all these different rulers in the Bhagavatam says, and many other rulers of demigods, men and demons, they fell from their positions because of this pride, this infatuation with material opulence. Therefore, the 11th canto, chapter 5, text 9 describes, Sriya vibhutya, Sriya vibhutya vijanena vidyaya chagena rupena balena karmana jatas mayananda diya sarvasvaran sattova manyanti hari priyankalaha. The intelligence of people who are very cruel is blinded by false pride based on wealth, opulence, prestige, family connections, education, renunciation, personal beauty, physical strength, and successful performance of rituals. Becoming intoxicated with this false pride, such cruel persons blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees. Therefore, Chanika Pandit, he says, there's four types of blind people. The chapa shanti janmanda, kamando neva pashanti, madan mata na pashanti, dosha martyai na pashyati. First one is janmanda, someone who's born blind from birth. That's a blind person. But there's another type of blind person, that's kamanda, someone who's very, very lusty. Krishna says in Gita, kamaistaista hita jnana, prabhadyante niya devata. These persons are very, very lusty. They lose their intelligence. Kamando naiva pashyati, madan mato, someone who's very proud. He's another type. That person, he can't see his own fault. Madan mato na pashyanti, dosha marti na pashyati. They can't see. They see everyone else's faults, but they can't see their own faults. So these are different types, three types of blind persons, janmanda, kamanda, and mohadanda. It's described by Prabhupada in his purport, the 8th canto, chapter 5, text 15 to 16. He says, to be extremely opulent in materialistic advancement is sometimes very risky. The material opulent person does not care about anyone, and he thus commits offenses to great personalities, such as devotees and great saints. This is the way of material opulence, as described by Sukadeva Goswami. Dana dharmandana. Too much wealth makes one blind. This happens even to Indra in his heavenly kingdom, what to speak of others in this material world. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well-behaved toward Vaishnavas and saintly persons. Otherwise, he'll fall down. So this is a symptom of a society. A society is very proud, it is very opulent, and it becomes proud. And they tend to offend other people. Just like America, they went in and they started this war in Iraq. But no one could say anything because America is a very, very powerful country. So they were able to do this thing and it offended many, many people. But because America is a very powerful country, no one would say anything. But previously, if you look in the history of America, when it wasn't so powerful in the very beginning of the country, they had much better relations with everyone. But now they're thinking everyone should follow us. And we see in terms of our own society, in ISKCON also. If we think of devotees in the early days, they're very, very humble. Because it's a very difficult thing to be a Hare Krishna devotee. Very few people, I think, Maharaj, when you joined, very few people were wanting to shave their head, move into the temple. There was no respect there. But now, especially in India, if you go to Orissa, you go to different places, so many people, they want to join the temple. Because they know, if I do that, then they'll give me some pranam and some pranami. They'll give me some respect, they'll give me some money, some prestige. Because ISKCON now has become very prestigious. Because we become very opulent. But with that opulence comes some danger. We may also commit some Vaishnava aparad. We may think, oh, we're Vaishnavas. I'm our guru, Jagat Guru. Our guru is a great guru, but everybody else, their guru is bogus. This is a symptom of materialism also even in a devotee life. Because this opulence, it degrades a person. Someone becomes proud because of this. There's a nice story that illustrates this point in the Narada Purana, in the first canto, chapter 7. This is related by Sanat Kumar to Narad Muni. It tells him about one king who was born in the solar dynasty. His name is Bahu. And he was the king of son of the king Brika. And this Bahu, he was a very good king. And he maintained the different four varnas and ashrams very strictly, according to the king's duty. And he took care of all of his citizens, and especially the Brahmins. And he encouraged saintly qualities in his society. He says, but after some time he became very opulent. And ekada tashiragyo vai sarva sampad vinasakrit ahankaro maham jagge masu yo lobahetuka. At this ahankar, this pride came upon him, and it caused this envy of other people, caused this greed, lobahetuka. This is the cause of it. And because of that, the king, he started criticizing others. This jealousy and greed took possession in the body of this king. And he started thinking, nobody's as good as me. I have the best kingdom. Just like sometimes we might think we're the best society. We're like this, we're like that. Because we have some opulence. Not because we have good qualities. We should judge by that. But we sometimes think we're great because we have many men or many buildings or lots of money. And we think in terms of those things. And it said that these things, sarva sampad vinashakrit, these things were the source of destruction. These are the source of destruction of all your wealth. When this pride comes, this will destroy everything. So this king, he became very jealous, and he started criticizing and making enemies out of different neighboring kings. And so then they attacked his kingdom, and he started fighting with them. And he fought with them for 1 month. And then after 1 month, this Maharaj Bahu, he was defeated by them. And he ran away to the forest, very dejected. It's a very, very painful thing for a Kshatriya to be defeated in battle. And have to run away with his tail between his legs. There's a famous story in India about one in Rajasthan. One king had went out to fight. He left the palace and things and went out to fight. And he was defeated. And he barely escaped with his life. And he went back to the kingdom, to his palace. And he found the door was locked from the inside. So he started beating on it. "Hey, it's me. Open the door." And his wife came there. And she said, "No, this can't be my husband. Because my husband would never return being defeated. He would die in the battle or not come back." This is the nature of a Kshatriya. They'll not return. They'll not run away from the battle. So this Maharaj Bahu, in a very, very humble position, he ran away from the battle. He's very dejected and morose. He lost all of his soldiers, all of his followers, all that he had left with his two wives. So he went with him to the. He took him with him to the forest. And there in the forest, he was wandering to the jungle, and he came across a very nice lake. And just seeing this lake, it was such a very serene, special place, it brought some peace to his mind. He was very distraught, very much in anxiety. So he decided to stay there at that lake. As soon as they saw him coming there, the birds and the other creatures, they became very unhappy, and they lamented, "Oh, just see, this very terrible creature has come." Because the Padma Purana describes it, they could see that this king was very proud. And even those creatures of the forest, they could understand that you shouldn't trust a proud person. So this Maharaj Bahu, he stayed at that place and he bitterly lamented for many, many days. And then after some days, due to his mental agony in his old age, he became very weak and sick, and finally he died. And he died, he wasn't too far away from the ashram of one sage named Orva Rishi. After he died, the youngest of his two wives, she became very miserable, and she decided she would commit sati. She would enter the fire of her husband's funeral pyre and commit suicide. So she was collecting some firewood and things to burn her husband's body. And the sage Orva, who was Trikalagya, who was a great rishi, he had the ability to see past, present, and future. He saw in his meditation this young lady was thinking like that, and he came to her, and he told her, "Hey, Tao, Tao. You stop, you don't do this thing." He told her that within your womb is a great king. And you can't commit suicide when you have this baby in your womb. This is a very, very sinful thing. So he convinced her not to do that. And he gave her some instructions on the rituals of which to burn her body. And she did it. She burned the body of this Maharaj Bahu. And when that body was burned, and this sage Orva Rishi was standing nearby, the Padma Purana describes that suddenly that king, he rose up from the fire in a spiritual body. And he got onto a transcendental chariot and he bowed down to that sage Orva. And it said there, the prapede paramam padam. He attained the supreme abode of the Lord. Well, that's a very interesting thing. How is that? Text 88 of that chapter describes, Kalevaram vatad bhasma tad dhuman chapi sattamaha jaripasyati punyatma sayati paramam padam. It said that if a great soul, sa'utama, simply looks favorable at a dead body, and not just a dead body, but tad bhasma, even its ashes, or dhumanchari, the smoke coming up from it from the funeral pyre, then that fortunate soul that occupied that body attains the highest goal. It's a statement from Padma Purana. Text 89 describes, Mahapataka yukto va sarvapatakai param padam prayatye va mahadvir avalokita. Whether they're a Mahapataka, someone who has great sins, or they're a sarvapataka, they're someone who has all sins, any person who will contain the supreme abode if they get the gracious glance of a great soul. So this is Vedic culture. Vedic culture is based upon the principle that we should offer respect and we should try to get the glance of saintly persons. And if we study, if we analyze the different aspects of Vedic culture, we can see that everything ultimately is based upon this principle of sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sadhu sashki koi, lava mantra sadhu sangha, sadhu siddhi hoi. All the shastras describe the glories of sadhu sangha, the importance of sadhu sangha. This is also the purpose of pious deeds. Thakur Bhaktivinoda describes in Chaitanya Sikshamrita that it's recommended that people, they should build bridges across the rivers. That they should plant shade trees along the roads where men are traveling. They should make nice lakes where people can come and take bath. They should go and they should distribute food and charity to the travelers, the atithis, the visitors, poor people. But what is the purpose of doing those things? If you do those things, you'll get some sukriti. And Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he describes, there's three types of sukriti. Karma mukhi sukriti, jnana mukhi sukriti, and bhakti mukhi sukriti. Karma mukhi sukriti is that pious benefit that by which one may attain the heavenly planets. And that's done through performing some karmic activities, such as building bridges, digging wells so people can drink water, planting shade trees and things. Better than that is jnana mukhi sukriti, by which someone understands neti neti, the absolute truth is not this, it's not that, hum brahmasmi, that we're spirit. You get some higher sukriti from that. And the highest type of sukriti is that activity which is not actually bhakti, but is bhakti and mukhi sukriti. It's something which leads to bhakti. Just like there's one fellow named Ras Khan. You know Ras Khan, the story of Ras Khan? Very interesting fellow. His samadhi is there near Gokul. He was a Muslim, and he had one very bad habit. He liked little boys for a very terrible reason. And somehow or other, he came to Braj. People told him, you stay away from that place, that Braj, the people that are all crazy. They're worshipping this Krishna. Because the Muslims, they don't want to see their brothers become devotees. But somehow or other, he came to Braj. And he came and he saw a picture of Krishna. Oh, he's so beautiful. And he had a very, very bad desire. An unspeakable desire. And he went to people. He saw these pictures of Krishna all over. And so he asked people, where is this little boy? I'd like to meet him. And the people, they said, well, that's Krishna. And if you want to meet Krishna, Krishna's everywhere in Braj. If you want to meet him, you just chant his name. You wander around and Krishna will come to you. So this Ras Khan, this very sinful, terrible personality, he started wandering all around Braj chanting, Krishna, 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 like this. And he got some bhakti mukhi sukriti. He wasn't chanting for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. He had a very, very terrible, terrible purpose in mind. But Chaito Dharpanam Arjunam, the holy name acted and it purified him. And he gradually became purified until eventually Krishna came to him. Krishna said, yes, what do you want? And then Ras Khan looked at him and said, oh no, I don't want that very terrible thing. I just want to be your servant. And he became a great devotee and wrote many wonderful poems glorifying Krishna. And when finally he passed away a few hundred years ago, they put him in samadhi near to Gokul. And his samadhi is a very interesting place. The architecture is half Vaishnav and half Muslim. Because people from both schools were claiming him as their own. So this is the nature of bhakti mukhi sukriti. But what then is the purpose of this karma mukhi sukriti and jnana mukhi sukriti? This purpose also is for this sadhu sangha. Because if you build a bridge, if you make some trees, you plant some shade trees so people's travelers on the road will come. And many people are coming, mostly sinful people. You may get some karma mukhi sukriti by doing that. But if one day a sadhu comes, a saintly person comes, like Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada's followers, some saintly devotee, and they walk across that bridge, they take rest in the shade of one of those trees, they take bath in that kund that you've made, they take some grains from you that you're giving in charity, they drink water from the well that you've dug, then you get bhakti and mukhi sukriti. So Vedic culture is a very clever culture. It's meant to actually even trick people. Because people, they don't have adhikar for understanding, for offering respect to saintly persons always. And therefore this culture, The society is given in such a way that still they can make some benefit. So, this Western culture is based upon the principle of pride. And this Vedic culture is based upon the principle of humility. In the Vedic culture, in the Vanashram culture, there's so many different reasons why we offer respect. And we can become humble for these reasons. This is described further in the Vishnu Smriti. Asamstutapi parapatni bhaganiti vakshaputriti maletiva. To someone else's wife, even though you may not know her, you should say, it's described there, you should call her sister, but if she's equal age to yourself, or you should call her daughter if she's younger than yourself, or you should call her mother if she's older than you. In this way, you should offer her respect. Vidham bandhar vaya karma vidya bhavati panchani etani manastanani gadiyo yadyarutaram. Wealth, relatives, age, performance of religious observances, and fifthly, sacred knowledge are all objects of respect. Each subsequent one being increasingly more important than those prior to it. So Vedic culture is a culture of humility. A culture where we try to cultivate ways we can offer respect to others. We should always look and try to think, how can I offer respect to other persons? A good example of this, and we could give examples if we wanted to go in depth with it, we could give examples of offering respect to the Brahmins. We could give examples of offering respect to the Vaishyas, to the Kshatriyas, to the Sudras, to the artists. So many different types of respect we could give. We can study something. We've collected a few pramanas about offering respect to women, to ladies. And a very interesting thing how Vedic culture considers it. The Brahmavivarta Purana, 1st Canto, Chapter 10, Text 50 describes, Marta ityeva sabdena yamcha sabhasate nara samatitulya satyena dharma sakshi satamapi. If a man addresses someone as Mataji, then dharma has witnessed that statement. And then in truth, she is the same as his mother. So it's not a cheap thing, Mataji. So when someone comes and they say Mataji, this or that. And then we should know. It's not a cheap thing when you address a lady like that. We should understand. Brahmavivarta Purana is saying that dharma personified is viewing that. And you should respect that person like that. You can just come and say, hey, Mataji, what the hell are you doing? Get out of the way. You know, don't you know? Go away. You're just being a botheration. If we call someone like Mataji, and sometimes people, they ask us actually, we have our email magazine. I don't know if all of you know this, but we have our Krishna Katamrita Bindu. In our cover letter, we have a very interesting sociological statement which we make, which very few people pick up on. But we address it, we start each one off, we say, dear Maharajas, Matajis, and Prabhus. And some people, they've written to us, we never advertise this, we don't want to quarrel with people in public, but they've written and said, why do you put Matajis before Prabhus? That's not right. And we wrote them back and we said, well, because of this verse, if I'm going to consider someone like my mother, my mother is a very special person. And respect is due more to her than even Prabhu's. And we see even examples of this even in Krishna. If we read in the Asakala Leelas, Krishna's pastimes he performs every day, when Krishna comes home and he goes to offer respect to his parents, who does he go to first? He goes to his mata. He goes to Mother Yashoda first because she's the most respected. This is further described in Narada Pancharatra. Ado samuchared radham paschat krishnam chamadavam viparitam yadipa tet brahmahatyam labed dhruvam. First, you should say the name Radha, and then you should say Krishna Madhav. You should say Radharani's name first. So we always say Radha Madhav, Radha Shamsundar, Radha Govinda, Radha Gopinath. And it's described by Narada Muni that if you utter the reverse, then you get the result of killing a Brahmin. I don't know how that works, but anyway, that's what it says in Narada Pancharatra. So don't do it. Put Radharani's name first. And then it's described, Shri Krishna Jagatam Dato Jagan Mata Charadika Pitu Sat Gunamal Mata Vanja Puja Garigasi. Krishna is the father of the world, and Radhika is the mother. The mother is 100 times more worshipable and higher in point of respect due than the father. So for this reason, we say, dear Maharajas, Maharajas and Prabhus. We start with Maharajas because they're the gurus of society. But Matajis are the mothers of our society. And we should be more respectful of them even than to Prabhus. This is confirmed in Mahabharata, Anusasana Parva, chapter 105, text 15 to 16. Dasa chaiva pitin mata sarvam va pitivim api goravena bilavati nasti matir samo guru mata gariyasi yachcha tenaitam manitejana. Your mother is equal to 10 fathers, or she's equal to the whole earth. There is no senior person equal to the mother. Indeed, she is above all others in terms of the reverence and respect due to her. It is for this reason that people offer so much respect to their mother. Similarly, the next chapter of Anusasana Parva describes, Nasti deidat param shastram, nasti matri samo guru, na dharma paramo labhas, tapo nanasanat param. I remember, by the way, as a personal note, I was in Mayapur last year. You were there maybe at the time, Prabhuji. My mother came for the first time to India. And we were giving a class and we were quoting all these verses. She became very happy. So it says in Mahabharata there. There is no shastra equal to the Vedas. No shastra superior to the Vedas. There is no guru equal to one's mother. There is no acquisition superior to that of virtue. And there is no penance superior to fasting. Narada Purana, similarly, first canto, chapter 14, text 18, describes, Tujanto patitan bandun dandyan uttamasahasam pitahi patita kamam natu mata kadachana. Anyone who rejects their kinsman for being fallen should be punished with uttamasasana, the highest monetary fine. You have to pay a fine if you reject your kinsman. Only the father may be considered fallen, but never the mother. No matter what she may do, your mother is not considered fallen. This is a version of Narada Purana. So this is just some examples, and we could cite examples like this. If we look, of reasons to offer respect to the Brahmins, reasons to offer respect to the Pujaris in the temple, reasons to offer respect to our Sankirtan leaders, reasons to offer respect to the temple presidents, reasons to offer respect to journalists, mundane journalists in secular society, reasons to offer respect to school teachers in secular society, or to governors, or rulers of countries. We should offer respect to someone's position. We should offer respect according to their knowledge, according to these eight different systems that Thakur Bhaktivinoda has given. And if you do that, you're a gentleman. What does the word gentleman mean? It used to be, even when I was growing up as a little boy, that everyone wanted to be a gentleman. I don't think anyone speaks about it anymore. Nobody cares. Now they just want to do punk rock and whatever it is, rap and shoot people and take drugs and whatever. But a gentleman is someone who's gentle. They're a man who offers respect to other people. In those days, someone who, if a lady was coming, you should open the door for her. It's described even Srila Prabhupada. Several times some of his lady disciples, you remember Prabhupada doing like that. Ladies were walking and Prabhupada stopped and held the door open for his lady disciples. Because Prabhupada was a gentleman. We should offer respect. But why offer that respect? Again, like the camel and the scorpion, we don't want to offer respect like the scorpion, just in name and words only. But we should have some motivation for it. We should think very deeply about who these persons are and why we can offer them respect, how we can offer them respect. And if we do that, then everything becomes very, very nice. And all of these things come based on this Trinadipi Sunichina principle, this ability to offer respect. In this regard, we'll finish with one story today of Karna. When Karna was getting ready, he took a vow that I won't fight in the battle of Kurukshetra because Bhishma Dev had made fun of him. So Karna said, until Bhishma is finished, I won't fight. So then when Bhishma was pierced by arrows from Arjuna, he was laying on that bed of arrows, Karna agreed to be in charge of the armies. And then he took help from Salya, who previously had promised Yudhisthira Maharaj that Salya would do whatever he could to break the enthusiasm of Karna. So he started taking him out, and he was his chariot driver, although Salya was a very great Maharati himself. And he started telling Karna, he said, you know, there's a nice amusing story I'd like to tell you, very interesting story. About, it's called the crow and the swans. So Karna said, yes, you tell me the story. She said, once there was a crow who was living in a kingdom near to the ocean. And that kingdom was a very good kingdom. Hare Krishna Bhuji. We're just finishing up with a story. So he didn't come at a totally bad time. In this kingdom, there's a very good king who was ruling there, and everybody was acting according to their natures and vana and ashram. And in this kingdom, there was one wealthy Vaishya who was living near the ocean. And they had so much money. And this crow was living right near his house. And every day that crow would come. And that wealthy Vaishya's children, they were feeding it very nice things. Very nice sweet rice and yogurt and different things. And that crow was eating all that things. So he was becoming opulent. And durida dosha guna rasi nasi. As the nature of too much wealth, it causes your fall down. This verse has two meanings. Prabhupada cites this verse in the 10th canto. Durida dosha guna rasi nasi means if you don't have wealth, then you're considered low class. But another meaning is that if you have wealth, it makes you degraded. So this crow had wealth in the sense that he was having all these opulent foods. For a crow, he's living for eating. So he became very, very proud. And those children, they were making fun of him. And they used to tell him, "Oh, you're the best of all the birds. There's no bird better than you. You're the king of all the puckies. You're Pucky Raj." And this crow, because he's eating so much, he's getting fat, and he's thinking, "Yes, I'm the best of all the birds," like that. So then one day, there came some Raja hunks of swans who were going to Kailash. Very saintly persons. And these swans were flying overhead. And that crow saw them and said, "Hey, what are you doing? You're coming here to my kingdom and you're not coming and offering respect to me. Don't you know that I'm the Pucky Raj here? I'm the most senior of all the birds. Everyone gives me respect. Who do you think you are anyway?" And those Raja hunks of swans were very, very powerful and very high class creatures. This is a crow. Crow is a very nasty creature. They were looking at him. "Oh, dandavats." He said like that. And this crow, he said, "You're very proud, aren't you? I challenge you to a competition, a flying competition. You think you can fly so good. I'll show you that I can fly in 100 different ways and I'll defeat you." And then all of his other brother crows, they were there and they were going, "Caw, caw, caw." They were clapping, "Very, very good. Yes, our brother crow, he's going to show that the crow is the best of all the birds." And these swans are looking, "Who is this crazy fellow? What is he speaking like this?" So they said, "Okay." So then that crow went up in the air and he started going like this and this, and doing circles and flying upside down, doing this thing and that thing. And all of his brother crows, they're going, "Caw, caw, caw." They were very, very happy. "Yes, yes, our brother crow, he's going to show these swans." And the swan, they're just laughing inside himself, watching all this. And the swan said, "Anyway, you can do all these different things. I just fly in one way. We're very simple." So then suddenly the swan started flying a little more quickly, a little more strongly. And that crow started going after him. And that swan started flying out over the ocean. And that crow started flying after him. And after some time, that crow had gone further out to ocean than he'd ever gone before. And after some time, he couldn't see the land anymore, any direction. And that crow started becoming afraid. And he started becoming very tired. Because he's trying to keep up with the swans have very huge wingspans. And he started getting weak, and he started flying lower and lower, until finally his feet were scraping on the water. And that Raja Hunks of Swan, he turned to him and said, "Hey, my dear brother crow, you were telling me about how powerful a flyer you were and how expert you were in flying. Now where is all your boasting? Where is your proud words now?" And then this crow, finally, he fell into the water. And he became very terrified. He said, "I know that in the water there's very big tilmingila fish and sharks, so many things. I'm going to become lunch for someone. This is very, very bad." So that crow, he cried out to that swan then. He said, "Oh, my dear brother swan, please, please help me. Please forgive me. I was so proud. You please help me. Please rescue me." So that swan was very kind. And he turned and came back. And he picked up that crow and put him on his back. And that poor crow, who was very soaking wet, all of this. Have you ever seen a wet bird? It's not a very proud-looking thing. It was very near death. It was completely exhausted and tired and crying. He brought that poor crow back and put him down on the bank there. And so then Salya, he told Karna, he said that you are like that crow. He said, you've been eating all the food from Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, and now you become very proud. And you think that you can go and fight with swan-like persons like Yudhisthira and Arjuna. But you're just a puffed-up fellow. We can also derive some symbolism from this story too. That if we forget the color of our feathers, if we forget the source of our good fortune, and we start thinking that some saintly person has given us some nice foodstuff, some nice prasadam, but then we start thinking, yes, I'm Pukki Raj. I'm the king of all the crows. I'm a great devotee now. I'm a sadhu. If we start thinking like that, we start thinking that we're the equal to those genuine saintly persons, and what to speak if we challenge them, then how will we cross over the ocean of birth and death? We may try to cross over that ocean, but we'll simply fall in the water and drown. And then in such a position, what can we do? Patista raju birbhadham. Karma adhyay vartma pati bihi chitta tu samarantastam. Agade pantumam bataha. Srila Raghunatha Goswami has written a very beautiful book called Brajvilastava. This is the first verse of that Brajvilastava. In that Brajvilastava, he describes all about Krishna's wonderful pastimes in Vrindavan. But he begins with this note of caution. Patista raju birbhadam. Kamadyarvatma pati bhi. Chitta tu sangarantistam. Agare pantumam bata. He says, I'm on this bhakti marg. I'm going on this path of bhakti. Just like you might want to go to Radhakund. You'll go by Chatikar Road, right? But if you decide you'll go there at 10 o'clock at night, what may happen? You're going down the road and you see some people, they come out on the road to stop you. You might think, oh, probably they heard my class and they want to congratulate me. Give me a donation or something because I'm so learned and we get such a nice class. So if you stop your car, what will you find out? They're dacoits. So Raghunatha Das Goswami says that I'm on this road of bhakti and some dacoits have come. And they've bound me up. But these are not ordinary dacoits. And the ropes they're using, they're not ordinary ropes. What are those ropes? Patista raju birbhadam. They're the ropes of pride and position. Thinking I'm a big person. Like this crow. He's just a crow. What is he? But he's thinking himself the equal of the swans. And they come and they bind you up with the ropes of pride and lust and greed. So he says, Chitvatu sanarantastan. Agare pantamam bataha. The aga demon is sin personified. So he says, I pray to those devotees who are servants of the killer of the aga demon, Krishna, that they may come and cut those ropes. And how will they do that? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says that the work of the sadhu is to come and he takes the sensuous desires of men just like a goat and places on the sacrificial block. And then with a knife, in the form of his sharp language, he cuts those desires. He gives us some sharp words. He chastises us. He says, and if the sadhu were to be my friend, if he were to flatter me, then he becomes my enemy. The very meaning of the word sadhu, he says, is this only. Sadhu means someone who cuts. So chitvatu sangarantasthan agare pantumam bataha. These saintly persons, they'll come and they'll cut this thing by chastising us. Are Baba, who do you think you really are? Don't forget the color of your feathers. We have this saying in America. We're just a crow and somehow we've gotten some Mahaprasad from Srila Prabhupada. We become a little fat and then we become proud. And we try to cross that ocean of material existence on our own strength. Our imagined strength as a devotee, then we'll fall down. But then in such a case, there's still some hope. If we called out to those hunksas, those paramahunksas, those saintly persons, you please forgive me, you please help me, you please take me back. And they can do that too. So this is Vedic culture. Vedic culture is a culture which is based on humility. And we'll speak something more about this tomorrow. I think we're a little bit over time. I'm sorry, I know everyone wants to go for prasadam. Maharaj, do you want to add anything?
Sorry, my question is yes.
When do we
when? When do we start on Tuesday?
On Tuesday. I think it's 12:30. Is that good? I guess we can do either 12:15 or 12:30. What would everybody like? Those who would like 12:15, raise your hand. Okay? We're doing this democratically. And those who would like 12:30?
12:30.
Okay, and everybody else doesn't mind. So you're the only 12:30, so it's 12:15. We'll start on Tuesday. And tomorrow everybody's encouraged to be good participants in our ISKCON society. And if you can, go to Delhi for the Rath Yatra Festival and take part there. We have some other function we're going to do personally tomorrow, but we'll take day after tomorrow, we'll have this class again. So any other questions or comments, eh, Prabhuji?
There's no class tomorrow.
I'm sorry?
There's no class tomorrow.
Right. We're going to speak more about this general subject matter later, but to specifically answer your question right now, a Vaishnava is someone who acts according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as they're given to him by his guru. And he doesn't try to do things beyond his field of influence. If your guru has told you that you should wash dishes and that's your life service, it's really not your business to go and try to tell the GBC how to do things. You should wash dishes. Or if he's told you to be a manager, then you should look. And if you see someone doing something wrong, you should chastise them. So Sanatana Goswami, what ability did he have to chastise the Nawab Hussain Shah? What ability do those Brahmins have? They're very weak in terms of physical strength. If they were to try to fight with that Nawab Hussain Shah, then definitely they would all be killed. And so we see, therefore, in Vedic culture, many times we see people like Narad Muni, who seems to be associating with Kamsa and encouraging Kamsa and glorifying Kamsa. But he's a saintly person. Why is he doing that? Or someone may question, how is it that Bhishma Dev, he's living with Duryodhan in the same palace and living on the mercy of Dhritarashtra. He sees, he understands, he has a particular field of influence, he has a particular service, and he acts according to that. If you're a king, if you're a Rajkhatriya, and you have the strength to chastise that king, you have the strength to defeat him, then you should do that. It's a very important thing. But we see in the case of Maharaj Ramchandra Dev, Gujapati Maharaj Ramchandra Dev, he's the one who installed Patit Pavan in Puri, that on one occasion there was a group of Muslims who were coming to Puri, and their purpose was to break the temple of Lord Jagannath, break the deity, and kill all the Brahmins, and which is something they'd been doing wherever they went. They're very, very demoniac persons. So he sent some spies to go and find out how powerful they were. The spies came back and they said, Maharaj, very bad news. They have a much, much bigger army than yourself, and there's no way we can defend Puri against them. So that king was in great anxiety. What am I going to do? That night, Lord Jagannath came to him in a dream and told him, Dire, dire, it's all right, don't worry about it. I'll make everything okay. He said, tomorrow you should go and make a marriage proposal to the daughter of the general of that army, and then everything will be okay. So that Ramchandra Dev, he did like that in the instruction of Lord Jagannath, and that Muslim ruler became happy, and his daughter married that king. Then there's a little more to the story. Then the king, next time he went to the Puri temple, Jagannath Mandir, they wouldn't let him inside. They said, hey, probationer, say, now you're a Yavana Malecha, you've married a Muslim girl, you can't come inside. He was very shocked. So he installed that deity at Patit Pavan Jagannath that you see inside the doorway there. And that's the story behind it. But anyway, this is a good example. He was a king. And he was a very powerful Kshatriya. But he saw that this is not the wisest thing to go and fight against these Muslims. Even though they're very demoniac and their purpose to come to Puri was a very terrible one, they should be killed. But he wasn't powerful enough to do it. So he acted according to Shastra and did some other statecraft, some diplomacy, and was able to avert a disaster. So we should be like that. We should be a little wise. And we should act according to our position, which is something I'd really like to emphasize a lot in the next few days. If in a society, if all the members of the society act according to the services and the position that's been given to them individually by Guru and Krishna, then everything works very, very nicely. But when we want to start doing something which is beyond us, which is a situation today all over the world, you just go on the internet and everybody wants to write, oh, the gurus are bogus, and they're like this, and the GBC's bogus, and this, and that, and the other. Well, who the heck are you? What are you doing? Well, you know, I follow one regulator principle, and I was initiated, you know, so many years ago, this and that, and I'm not chanting anymore. So what is the position of that person? It's not a service which was given to them by Guru and Krishna. If Guru and Krishna come and tell you, I want you to reform ISKCON. I want you to reform the Vaishnava community and point at all the faults. Then you'll be empowered to do that thing. And like Kalki Avatar with his sword on the horse, you'll be able to go and cut everyone's head, and reform everything. But if it's not your service, nice verse in Pabha Purana describes Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidimvina Upachayaka Kopate. If you act against Shastra, against your proper position, then what happens? You just create a disturbance in society. And that's what's going on today. Disturbance means that the people are disturbed in their mind. They can't do